Okay, here we go.
Something.
Okay, here we go.
Welcome once again. It is time for another episode of the Something Something Cast.
Something Something Cast.
I'm James Hatton.
I'm Podcast Rob.
And we, sup?
Hey.
Hey, Ben. Before we get started, we should announce that this episode is brought to you by audibletrial.com/something. Have you tried out Audible yet, sir?
I have.
Ooh, what'd you read?
Well, I signed up for it. I haven't actually selected my book yet, but I'm in the process of it. I am packing for a vacation I'm leaving for tomorrow, but I will be spending 6 days in the glorious state that is New Hampshire. Hello, New Hampshire. And I'll be picking something out while I'm up there so I can... I'm an early riser when I'm up there because it's cool, it's relaxing, it's quiet. So my go-to is usually to go out on my friend's deck around 8 o'clock in the morning with the biggest glass I can find out of their cabinet. A third of it is filled with ice. The rest of it is filled with Kahlua. And, that's breakfast.
Fantastic.
So I'll sit out there with my laptop and plug in some headphones and... listening to something while I start drinking early.
Well, and if you are listening to this and wondering what you get if you go to audibletrial.com/something, you will get one free audiobook and a month subscription to Audible, where you will get all of the deals and specialties that they throw at you. I just loaded up the Audible page, and funny enough, the book that I just got Brittany is right there, The Fireman by Joel Hill.
Well, there you go.
So there you go. Audible.com.
Audibletrial.com/something. Free month trial and a free book.
And you can't beat that. So here's my tip for you guys. Go for a big book.
Yes.
Because Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, great book, 200 pages. It's going to go really fast. If you go and you get like a Brandon Sanderson, like 400 page Sun Bitch or Game of Thrones, that's going to be like, you're going to get your bang for your buck for your free
Do they have like the complete Hitchhiker's Guide on an audiobook?
I don't know whether they have the whole thing. They probably break it up. Here, well, why don't we, before we start our episode, why don't I take a look at that
like
real quick?
Five books. Well, it's five books.
Yeah, in the horribly named trilogy?
Yes.
No, they have them individually.
Gotcha.
But I would say you should go for Dirk Gently's Holistic Detective Agency.
I have to repurchase that book.
Yes.
So good.
And it's narrated by Douglas Adams.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, he did a lot of his own. Oh, The Restaurant at the End of the Universe is being narrated by Martin Freeman. No shit.
That's kind of meta.
Yeah, that's fantastic. All right. Anyway, audibletrial.com/something, and you can get all that crap. Now let's get to our episode.
We're getting Audible. Better at that.
Ooh, they have a dramatized version of... Anyway, all right, I'll stop. Of Dirk Gently. There's a full audio drama version.
Nice.
Yeah. Anywho. So, we also have an episode that isn't just about sponsors.
Correct.
You are going on your... You're heading off on vacation.
Yes.
And so we spent the last week... We did the Patreon, which goes up as far as the world goes tomorrow, and then... Now we're recording this a little bit early, so you can tomorrow be driving off to places unknown.
I'm pretty sure people know where New Hampshire is.
I don't.
It's on a map.
Well,
you have a computer for a phone. On my way there, I will tell you where I'll be driving through.
Are you going to be going? Are you going to have to raise up the wings?
I will.
Yeah, Wooington.
Gonna be driving through the Woo. Shout out to Tim Stevens.
Fantastic. He'll know. He'll feel your presence.
Oh, he totally will, because I'll tweet it. Usually as I'm doing 75, I try to focus my camera on the steering wheel to take a picture of the off-ramp sign and then quickly tweet it while I'm driving, so...
Excellent.
That's not dangerous at all.
No. But that being said, we needed to kind of look at an episode, because did you see Guardians?
I have not yet.
I did see Guardians, but we knew that that was probably a hit or miss on which one of us wouldn't see it.
Yeah, I'm probably going to see it this week along with Alien Covenant.
Ah, very good. So we needed an episode that was going to sort of hit home for us that we could talk passionately about but didn't have to do a whole lot of legwork.
Yeah.
So, Highlander.
Yes, we are doing an episode on the Highlander franchise. And I actually thought for a little bit about just doing this entire episode in a Scottish accent.
Oh, please, God, no. You do a good one.
I thought it would be cool, but then again, I mean, you know, Christopher Lambert doesn't have a Scottish accent, so...
And he did three movies with it.
It's okay. Yeah, he did. He does most of the movies with a Scottish accent, and the Egyptian guy has a Scottish accent, so...
We'll touch
on that.
We will. And what's funny is I rewatched Highlander today just to sort of, and it's not because I needed it refreshed. It was because I saw my friend had the riff tracks. So I was like, oh, I'll watch the riff tracks of this. Caught something I never caught before. At one point in time, Ramirez says he calls Connor Bendejo. I've never, ever caught that there's any Spanish in Ramirez whatsoever. Except for the fact that he calls once when they're on the boat, he calls Connor Bendejo.
Yeah. Well, because even though he's Egyptian, he's working for King Charles V of Spain.
I know. It just cracked me up.
But like Ramirez and I work for a Spanish guy, the entirety of the Spanish in the movie.
Yep. That's it.
Actually, the fact that he's Egyptian and working for a Spanish guy, and his last name is Ramirez, is also probably the entirety of the Scottish in the movie as well.
Yeah.
There's not a whole lot of it. Connor's family has more Scottish accent than Christopher Lambert does. Christopher Lambert sounds more like Renfield.
And from what I was told...
only one.
It's a kind of magic. Worst line of the film. From what I understand, they were fine with his accent being completely vague as to speak to him being worldly and having been all over the place, so his accent is fairly unintelligible.
Yeah, and thousands of years old.
Except for the fact that when he's in Scotland as a Scotsman and he's been there 20 years, he still has the same weird-ass accent. Maybe a little thicker in the brogue.
Well, that's just it. It's a guy with it's him trying to blend at that point, because he's still got the crappy Raiden accent, but but he's putting lad in the at the end of every sentence, you
right?
Know?
Yeah. Heather, please.
Are you scared, Connor? No, cousin, I'm not.
So what's your first experience with Highlander? Was this something you saw in the theater as a kid, or was it later?
No, I actually saw it at a friend's house up in North Jersey. There was a bunch of us that worked not only at the Renaissance Festival, but also worked at Medieval Times up in North Jersey. Shout out to Medieval Times. We were hanging out one day, and they put this movie in, and I had heard about it, but I hadn't actually seen it. It was kind of a double feature day, because we watched that, and then we watched Knight Riders.
Like that, just episodes of it?
No, it's a movie called Knight Riders. It has Ed Harris. They are a traveling Renaissance festival that jousts on motorcycles.
I think I need to see this thing.
You do need to see this thing, and if it were put into the theaters today, it would monetarily do better than King Arthur: Legend of the Sword. No doubt.
Okay.
No doubt.
Bold words. Not so bold.
Not so bold, no. But, yeah, I mean, working at a Renaissance festival, at various festivals for as long as I have, you don't get through your Ren Fair career without having seen Highlander, Monty Python and the Holy Grail.
Yeah.
There's certain movies that you just... you watch. It's like part of the orientation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's probably about five. You named the top two, though, right there. Highlander and Holy Grail. You might throw in, what's a...
Conan.
Maybe, Conan. I was thinking of the Matthew Broderick Lady Hawk.
Oh, yeah. Ooh, yeah. Good one.
Yeah. And then from there, it gets sort of wishy-washy if you've seen, like, Hawk the Slayer or other...
Or Krull.
Yeah.
You get stupidness like that. But yeah. But Highlander was good. It was campy. It had a Queen soundtrack. It had Clancy Brown. I mean, come on.
Yeah. I'll tell you, I saw it. I don't remember why I stopped and started watching it, but I remember distinctly, like, where I was. I was in my father's office, because that's where the computer was, and I was sitting there goofing off on the computer. Shocker. When I was probably 13, 14, and like that movie is 14-year-old fodder. That movie is everything 14-year-old Jamie ever wanted in a film. You got sword fights, you got Queen music. It starts off with the fabulous Freebirds. I was in from there. I probably over the course of the next like 4 years, I watched it 1,000 times. I had the movie posters. I went full Highlander before I even was doing Renaissance festivals and stuff.
Right.
It was in the Blood Highlander. Heart of the Stag. So, where are you on the other films? You're probably very similar to where I am.
I mean, I've seen all of them.
Yeah.
The only ones I haven't really seen are like the TV ones.
Oh, we'll get there. I've seen them. We'll get there. Not good.
Yeah, basically, I in my opinion, there are four Highlander movies.
Okay.
So.
Oh, you just because you mean the up to Endgame, and that's that.
Yeah, because I haven't seen the source, and I wasn't really into the TV show at all.
I'm impressed that you think there are four when most people usually only allow there to be one or two.
Well, you know, somebody on Twitter the other day was talking about Highlander 2, and I had made a comment, you know, as Highlander fans are wont to do, there should have been only one.
Mm-hmm.
And it's this... See... Okay, we'll get into it. But the first movie was, I mean, concept-wise, first movie was pretty fucking cool, to be honest.
Pretty cool. Little vague in the answers. It was like a D&D campaign where the DM didn't like write an ending, so he just kind of, oh yeah, no, you won all knowledge and power and stuff.
Well, he didn't really write a beginning either, because there's no explanation as to where they come from, why they're here.
That is very true.
You know, but you're okay with that.
Yeah, you kind of just buy into it real quick. Like once you, because the movie starts off with a sword fight in the Madison Square Garden parking lot.
Yeah, the parking garage.
Yeah, you're like right there already. There's all right, fine. I'm gonna watch dudes fight each other with swords. I'm all over this already. Yeah, they don't explain much. It's just we don't know why they feel the urge. We don't even know their like whole semblance of powers. Like. You can write holes, and then you sit there and go, yeah, but we don't know much. Like, how does Kurgan know he's going to be an immortal? We don't. Kurgan's just that cool. What about the Heart of the Stag? They never do that again. That's Ramirez's superpower.
Well, no, but let's be realistic here. I think by the time we see the Kurgan out on the battlefield in Scotland...
Mm-hmm. The baddest-ass armor ever.
Yeah, he pretty much fucking knows he's immortal.
How?
What do you mean, how?
How does the Kurgan know that Connor is immortal before Connor has ever died? Kurgan's the first guy who killed him.
I thought you meant, how does the Kurgan know that he is immortal?
Oh, no, I'm sorry. How does he know that Connor
is? I figured it out.
Yeah.
Well,
how does he know that Connor is immortal? I just assume it's one of those like Highlander secret powers we never hear about more than once. They can fucking summon lightning.
Well, and here's the thing, though. He knows that Connor's an immortal, but Connor doesn't know that the Kurgan is an immortal.
Uh-huh.
Because Connor hasn't been awoken yet.
Right. Hashtag woke. Yeah.
Right. So I think once you become an immortal, you can sense other immortals, even if they don't know it yet.
I'm going to tell you, the best way I've ever heard any of this explained, and I know you can still find it online, because I've wanted to do it for years. You can find, somebody took Highlander and made White Wolf Rules out of it. So, the ability to sense a immortal before they become mortal, that's like a gift power, that's your power. Summoning lightning, that's a power. The heart of the stag, etc., etc., etc.
Lightning.
Yeah, when he's standing on the cliff edge, and I forgot it again until I watched it today. Right after Ramirez introduces him, he's standing there and he's got his hand up, and Connor's just getting hit with lightning. He's just getting fucking struck with lightning a half a dozen times.
Yeah, but that wasn't that after Ramirez tells him he's an immortal?
Yes. But he didn't kill anybody. It's not like he got a quickening. He's just, hey, look, you got lightning now. You got force lightning. Go you, Scotsman.
Okay.
But anyway, yeah, there's...
I see that scene the way you see that scene, but that's fine.
But yeah, there's White Wolf Rules, which I've always thought they're very well done. If you like that sort of thing.
Okay.
But go on. I'm sorry. I totally, like, sidetracked. Good.
No, that's okay. It had the weirdest cast ever. And I think that's kind of the joke, though, because you've got, Lambert, who's French, playing a Scottish guy, and you've got the Scottish guy playing an Egyptian guy.
And then you have Clancy Brown playing is he Russian, Mongol, something?
That's a good question. Let us see where they say the Kurgan is from.
I think Kurgan are Russian.
Wikipedia is calling him Scythian, born on the Caspian Sea. He is a member of the Kurgan tribe, is what they're saying.
And the Caspian Sea is by Azerbaijan, Turkmenistan. And I know this right off the top of my head. I'm not looking at Google.
Yeah, no, not at all.
yep.
I think I always pictured him as some sort of Mongol-ish kind of...
Yeah.
Character. I don't know if I necessarily thought Russian, but...
Most of us are related to Genghis Khan. He can be, too.
Yeah.
But they were, like, second cousins versus, you know, we're like, great. There is one of my favorite moments in the extended series, and this is, I want to say it's an end game, where the Watcher, Joe... he's talking to Duncan about the big bad. I don't remember the big bad's name from Endgame. But he brings up a little computer and he goes, this is how many people you've killed. And it's like 210. This is how many your cousins killed. And it's like 504. This is how many the Kurgan killed. And like 809. This is how many blah blah killed, whatever the big bad, and the numbers just start scrolling.
Yeah. You should know what the big bad did, because the big bads in all four Highlander movies, and I'm just going to say that there's only four,
mm-hmm.
They all started with the same letter.
They all started with the letter K?
Yep. You had the Kurgan in the first one, you had Katana in the second one, you had, where is it? Kane in the third one, and then you had Kel in the fourth one.
What a fun fact. I had no idea about that.
Yep. The second one is technically General Katana, and it's Jacob Kel, but they only ever call him Kel in the movie, I think.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, all Ks.
See, the second movie, do you like the second movie?
Why would you even pose that question?
Because you actually included it in your count, I guess. Maybe that was so... All right, fair enough.
Well, yeah, because it was made.
Because it actually exists.
But
fair
I think
enough.
It's one of the only movies in existence where the director's cut is 18 minutes shorter than the theatrical cut.
Oh, that is
didn't
fair.
Didn't they hire people from the dark web to go in and scrub out any and all reference to Zeist in the director's cut?
It's like that picture of Beyonce. They don't want you to know it's there.
The second movie is absolutely, absolutely horrid.
And from what I've been told, and I'm sure if we pulled up on the trivia, it'll probably validate this to some degree, that the main reason it was made is because they had them for two movies. Like, they had Connery for a second film. Smartly, they killed him in the first one, only to go, oh, well, we got Connery for the second one. He's big budget, so we got to bring him in. So we get him, like, magically wish-beamed into a Shakespeare scene on Planet Zeist. Good God, that movie.
I'm just taking a look real quick.
Yeah, yeah, take a glance through some of the trivia. I believe I read somewhere that the only reason that Connery was in it, and he was unthrilled that he was in it, was because he was contracted.
I'm not seeing anything on here that specifically says that, although... Oh, wait, they did say something about a director's cut.
Oh, and they asked...
I'll have to read up on it.
They asked Clancy Brown.
Now, the sad thing, too, is that it's the same director in both movies.
Yes.
Pretty, yeah. How you go from one to the next one, I'm honestly not sure. But according to Wikipedia... according to the documentary Highlander 2 Seduced by Argentina, the film's poor performance is partially a result of the bonding company's interference with the director. Mulcahy reportedly hated the final product so much he walked out of the film's world premiere after its first 15 minutes.
All right. I found on the side here, I was incorrect. Ramirez was not supposed to be in the film. However, Lambert had become such good friends with Connery filming the original that he threatened to back out if Connery wasn't added. So, yeah.
Ooh, there's an alternate ending known as the fairy tale ending where Connor magically returns to Zeist, bringing Louise along with him.
Embracing in front of a field of stars, then transform into light streaks and fly into space. What's the best thing about this movie is it bombed. Like, it obviously did not do well. There is the Highlander animated series.
Now, I will say this. The budget for the first movie was about $19 million, and it made $12.9 in the box office.
Okay.
Highlander 2 made 15.6 at the box office.
Yeah, not critical fame right there.
Yeah, the third movie was a $26 to $34 million budget and made $13 million at the box office.
Also, what? Not for nothing. Mary Van Peebles was like after Mary Van Peebles' star had fallen.
Oh, he was Kurgan Light.
Yeah. But he wasn't, I mean, he was already C-list action movie guy then. He had a hot minute, and I'd have to go look up his personal IMDb to know, to tell you exactly when that was. But, like, this is 10 years or 5 years after that.
Oh, yeah, yeah. But they realized what they did wrong in the second one. I mean, you know, Michael Ironside's a great guy, but still. They tried to catch lightning in a bottle again because they made the Sorcerer look mm-hmm. almost like the Kurgan did, and yep. even talked like him, so it's like they were trying to go down memory lane again. That one didn't work out, and even Endgame was budgeted at $25 million and came in at under $16 million. So who was this? Oh, this is Bob and Harvey Weinstein produced the fourth one.
Oh, did they?
Yeah.
That's not surprising. So what's funny about, and I don't even know whether I've told this story on the air. This
is Dimension Films, because I'm surprised they're still in business if that's the case.
Well,
Dimension Films, Miramax, Dimension Films, yep.
And I don't know whether I've told my Davis Panzer story, my Panzer Davis story on the air. It's fairly legendary. I got into the TV series before there was such a thing as DVD box sets. But they had, like, during the syndicated, because this is one of those big syndicated shows, it was on, like, the Xena, Hercules, Jack of All Trades Rock Block. And so, for my birthday, probably I was 17 or 18, I got the first season box set. Now, these box sets, number one, they were, like, $75 to $100.
Yeah, yeah.
And they would send you the t-shirt, and they would send you a poster, and they would send you a keychain, and they'd send you a mug, and then, like, you get the next box set. And that one, do you get another t-shirt, and, like, a key fob, and a tie tack, like, anything that they could put the Highlander name on, they would. So it got to where they would call me, because they had their own customer service thing, and say, hey, we're calling from, this is from Panzer Davis. We see that you have the first and second box sets. We're running a sale on the third one. If you have any interest, you know, we can take 10% off the price. It'll be only $110. And I'm like, sorry, money's not there right now. Call me back in about a month. Dead serious, 30 days on the nose. I would get a call from them saying, hey, we spoke to you a month ago. Oh my God, you spoke to me like a month ago and 5 minutes. You guys are good. It got to the point where they would, I had up to four seasons. I don't remember exactly how many there were. I think it was seven, maybe six. Where they would call and be like, okay, we're going to give you the last two box sets and the katana for $80. And I'd be like, I already have the katana. All right, the trench coat. I already have a trench coat. We will give you Christopher Lambert's eye. And you're like, dude. They are shameless. It's the reason that I think they did the cartoon, which is based on the second movie, which is odious. And why they kept doing these horrible made-for-TV ones after the series. They just, any way to cash in. And sadly, they just haven't struck lightning a third time. Because I'd say the TV show had its moment where it was really good. They keep trying,
I just
though.
Never got into the TV show.
I liked from the first episode when they, I think it's a, not Martin Mall, Shannon Mall, the guy who played Bull on Night Court.
Yeah.
Yeah. He comes out and he's got a sword that has like a rocket launcher in the hilt. So he's there fight. And Duncan's running away. And then he tilts back the sword, like swivels it 180. And then, and you're like, oh my God, they're actually using different weapons. And they'd had some cool ideas. They built on some of the rules, like what happens if a little kid is an immortal? He becomes an asshole. What happens if a woman's an immortal? She becomes an asshole.
He becomes an asshole.
What happens if Roddy Piper's an immortal? Asshole. What about Joan Jett? Sometimes asshole.
That's funny.
Yeah, it was. It had its moment. It had its heyday. The later seasons are so bad. But it does a really. There's a really great subplot about the Four Horsemen, because they were immortals, of course.
Right.
And since Duncan spends, you know, four or five seasons just eating the quickening of bad guys, he slowly but surely turns super bad, because he's getting their essence. So he's got to like cleanse himself and blah blah blah. It. I'm not saying it was awesome. But I would say it's definitely good background noise.
The thing that really bugs me the most about this being a franchise is the first movie told its entire story. You know, doesn't he say at the end of the first movie that like he feels different now? Like he feels more mortal?
Yeah, I can have kids, I can live,
yeah.
I can die.
So,
yeah.
So where do we... okay, let's erase the second movie from our memory, because we know that's terrible. The third one tried to eliminate that. The previous ones, the ones that came after, tried to pretend the second one didn't happen.
And most of them, I will say, they also tried to pretend that the last 5 minutes didn't, of the first one.
Right, but that's just it. Like... he's won, he's destroyed all the other immortals, and then there's a sequel and there's more immortals.
Yes.
What we used to joke about, you know, what we would do if we were making a sequel to Highlander. What I was hoping the story would have been about is we've just said Connor's mortal, Connor can have kids.
Mm-hmm.
So this would, it would almost be like the next generation, the second generation of like the Dragonlance stuff, where it's all their kids now.
Gotcha. Okay.
Connor and his, you know, woman have kids. Those kids go on and have kids.
His woman.
Those kids go on and have kids. At some point in time, whether it's, you know, 4 removed, 6 removed, 10 removed, whatever number you want to put on it, they start reawakening?
Yeah, being immortal again?
Yeah, like that generation, 5 removed from the winner of the prize or whatever, is where the immortals start, you know, arising again.
That's not a bad call.
And they fight their way back down to one, and this is a constant circle that goes on and on and on. And it would have been cool because the reason, our reasoning, that they have the quickening is because if they didn't, they wouldn't survive. If everybody on the planet ended up being immortal, then eventually you run out of resources.
Gotcha.
So it's kind of like a population control thing. Well, like, once there gets so many of them, we got to weed ourselves back down to one. Because a million of us is just way unbalancing to everything the universe stands for.
I like that. I think I got a half a beat different. I would say that it's a natural evolution. It's just all of a sudden, like, there's a mutation that one out of every blah, blah, blah kids ends up being immortal. Number one, they're sterile. So, brr. But you're right, because it's a resource hog, they have to be bred out. So it's Mother Nature's sort of counterbalance to have them kill each other. That's a cool idea.
Yeah, too bad they didn't go with it in any
nope.
of them.
Nope, 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 nope. We get space laser beams that is not Star Wars and hoverboards that isn't Back to the Future.
This
and...
is absolutely terrible. The biggest joke is I literally think there's a scene where they're having a sword fight towards the end, and it's in like this big construction complex, and they're fighting in one scene, and they fight their way through a doorway into a different room, and in the one room, Connor is holding one of those crappy sheet steel stamped Zeistian swords.
Right.
And in the middle of the fight, as they're hacking and slashing at each other and fighting through the doorway, in the next room, he's suddenly holding his katana again.
And it's just a complete, like, edit faux pas?
This movie was so rife with edit faux pas.
I haven't,
and,
I will...
And I, inconsistencies.
I have not seen it in so long. I really just should for the laugh. You know, I don't remember how it ends. I remember that basically there's a Mr. Burnsian plot to, like, block the sun, or there's a Earth Shield, or whatever.
Well, Connor created the Earth Shield.
Okay.
Because the ozone layer had been depleted, so he had created this Earth Shield.
A moralistic tale from Highlander.
Yeah, but part of what the Earth Shield did was it threw up all these, like, reddish-orange clouds that basically covered the planet, so there was really no daytime or nighttime, and everybody just kind of went, this sucks. You should just kill everything. And it was so bad.
Highlander 2 was promoted as, quote, the biggest super production filmed in Argentina. That's your claim to fame right there, kids.
John C. McGinley played a character, David Blake. I'm just reading, this one line just killed me here. John C. McGinley made his character's voice as deep as possible in an effort to sound like Orson Welles. He has since admitted that this was a bad idea. Oh, that is fantastic.
I went on the... Let me see which page this is for. This is for The Source. The Source being the last Highlander made-for-TV sort of thing. It's based in the series. It's after Endgame. It's the... I'm going to tell you, when I turned it on, it's the same thing. It's like when Crow 2, to reference another similar sort of TV show, weirdo movie thing. When you see the Crow 2 and it's all that yellow sodium lighting.
Right.
And you're like, oh, that's because they must have filmed this someplace cheap. because it's I notice it now that these films that have this weird yellow lighting always are filmed in like Romania or someplace where they can get all the permits and get everything on the dirt cheap to make the film so they don't lose so much money. The source, there is not a scene in that movie that is not a shade of orange. Like, they're running through streets that you're like, these are not American streets. Where in America? And they're supposed to be in, like, Chicago or something. Like, where in America is there cobblestone? Like, Jesus. Yeah. But yeah, I would love to see a retro, sort of retroactive end of the first movie where the whole movie goes exactly the same. And after Connor slices open Kurgan, he gets the quickening, but it's just a regular old quickening. And he's like, oh, shit, there's that guy we left in the fucking rock. Highlander 3.
<Yeah. laughs> I think you were at the Renaissance Festival when we were doing this. We used to do the award shows.
Oh,
we,
yes.
We had kind of, the parody was that the group of us that had made a quote-unquote production company to put on the award shows, like a mock award show for the Ren Faire we worked at, had been branching out and getting into actually feature-length movies. And we used to do three or four movie trailers that all had a common theme. One year we did it was Highlander.
As a 16-year-old or 17-year-old, these things were comedy fucking gold.
Oh, and we actually did the Highland. We did one called Highlander: The Shortening. We did When Highlander Met Sally. I can't remember what the other ones were.
Those are the two I remember.
We actually did a sword fight scene in the parking garage of one of the local malls. Like, we completely went in guerrilla style, filmed it in like 15 minutes, and jetted. But when the guy playing Connor got the quickening, we had the tripod set up, and he drops to his knees screaming, and we're flashing our headlights on the cars off and on and revving the engines and everything. And then we just start pelting them with handfuls of Crisco from off camera. Just like giant snowball-sized wads of Crisco. Because there's a scene where they're running on the beach, and they run up to a can of Crisco on a pier. And the guy playing the Ramirez character sticks his fingers in there and eats a giant glob of it. And he goes, "Can you taste that, Highlander? That's the shortening."
Can I tell you?
It was so terrible and yet hilarious.
That quote, "Can you taste that, Highlander? That's the shortening," remained.
We literally almost vomited because the joke was he was supposed to run his finger through it and then like lick his finger. But he went in there for like a three-finger scoop of Crisco and just like, "Hey, can you taste that, McCloud?" Meanwhile, behind the camera, we're all going, "Oh, God, he ate it."
Do you have those anywhere?
I've always wanted to ask you this. I know somebody who might, but I don't even know if they still have them anymore. I know I don't. There's probably two people on this planet who may have available copies of those.
I would also love to see your, not to digress too far, your Star Wars edit.
Oh, that was Big Kev from Okay. Big Kev's Geek Stuff.
Yep. Because that, to explain, they recut the end of Star Wars. FYI, this is all before special edition everything.
Oh, yeah.
So this is ahead of its time. They recut the Death Star strike, except Darth wins.
Yeah.
And the
my favorite line was that when they're looking for, you know, when like Luke kind of disappears because he turns off his targeting computer and are all like, "Has anybody seen Luke?" It cuts in and he's like, it cuts in with the leader for the Red Squadron. And it's just a redub of "He impacted on the surface." Like, oh, crashed.
Yeah. And and the gold of that is you have the last scene of it where Darth has won all of the TIE fighters, whatever, they've exploded. You flash to them to Leia and C-3PO sitting over the computer where in the original they're both watching the strafe run.
Yeah.
They look at each other. Beat, look, beat, and then the explosion of Alderaan.
That was good stuff. That was ahead of its time.
Super ahead of its time. You still owe me my CD.
Stop. It's a discussion for another day, my friend.
I understand. I'm busting balls.
So, Highlander 3, The Final Dimension. Again, by Miramax Films. We talked about it already. Mario Van Peebles, way after his prime.
And he plays has magic powers. That's the gimmick.
He's the sorcerer.
Let's see if there's any trivia for this one whatsoever.
Well, the thing that killed us in this one was, being from the Garden State. We were watching this, a bunch of our friends got together and we're watching it in the theater, and there's a part where Kane kidnaps Connor's adopted kid.
Mm-hmm.
I guess we have to assume he's an adopted kid. And he calls Connor and he's like, if you want your kid back, you'll meet me at the abandoned installation factory in Jersey City. And the entire movie theater erupted with, no! Not even an immortal can survive in Jersey City.
This is before it has been recently in the last decade or so been gentrified into a really nice place. But, Jersey City was bad news back then.
Yeah. When this movie came out, Jersey City was like Camden.
Yeah. Yes. Not to jump back to the first movie, I did want to point out one thing that I noticed watching it today.
Okay.
The cops in the movie, the whole movie starts with him and
don't
the police.
Don't move, pal. Don't even breathe.
Yep. Why, you Garfield? You're cruising for a piece of ass. It's not that they don't do their jobs well in the movie. If you remove them from the film, the movie doesn't change. They're Indiana Jones in Raiders of the Lost Ark. They actually serve no function in the film. They get nothing done. The last time you see them is the crazy army guy who gets gutted by the Kurgan and tells the two policemen the craziness that he saw.
Right.
That's the last time you see the cops.
That's actually pretty funny.
They just fade off into the background. And the whole movie sort of just happens along without them. Kurgan and Connor have a fight. Particle wins, Particle Man. What does baffled mean?
So Endgame was supposed to be pretty big.
Yes, it was.
Because
it was
like merging the TV universe and the movie universe.
I saw it in theaters. It's the one Highlander movie I saw in the theaters.
I saw it in theaters, too. We were really hoping for it. It was really weird when they show Kel fighting and you see like the digital body count counter going up in the mm-hmm. corner. That was kind of bizarre. And there were some scenes in the trailers that never showed up in the movie that
yes.
I really would have liked to see. There was a scene where I don't remember where they were fighting, but I guess because the special effects were cheaper, the camera angle kind of panned from the fight to the brick wall they were fighting in front of, so you saw the silhouettes fighting. And you could tell Kel was in the middle, and you had Duncan on the right and Connor on the left, and he's fighting both of them, blah, 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 blah. And one of them does, like, the big overhand Hassan chop to Kel, and the shadow splits into two, and each shadow, like, one of his shadows was fighting Duncan and one was fighting Connor, and when they panned back, there were two Kels. Never made it into the movie.
That was...
And, like, when I saw that on the trailer, I was like, okay, these guys are fucked.
Yeah.
Like, this could be pretty badass. Never showed up.
That's... Well, funny
like
you say that.
In The Crow 2, there was a scene where it's a silhouette of him walking towards a wall, and then the silhouette just explodes in crows that, like
oh,
a
yes.
swarm of crows that fly away. Never made it into the movie.
And that still goes on to this day, because there's a scene in Rogue One where she's standing there and that, I guess it's an X-Wing, just kind of fly or TIE fighter, flies up in front of her and she's like face to face with the thing. Never in the movie.
Yeah.
So they still do that. But yeah, let's see. The film's trailer infamously contained many sequences and elements not in the film. A scene showing Connor and Duncan leaping through a magical portal. It was later stated that certain scenes were shot exclusively for the trailer in order to make the movie look more interesting. Like, literally made just to make the movie look good. Totally different movie. It's for a movie that doesn't exist. Silliness.
Wow.
Other fun fact, apparently David Bowie was considered for the role of Kel. Would have been a very cool... That'd be a badass movie. I don't care whether it was good or not. David Bowie is a Highlander.
Wasn't this kind of supposed to be a big deal? Because wasn't Edge in this movie?
I was going to mention that, yeah. Edge...
Yeah, Adam Copeland.
Adam Copeland. He got such a cheesy line. He plays like a brigand. I don't remember whether he's an immortal or just sort of a street rat. But Duncan literally says to him, "Hey, don't lose your edge." And you're like, oh. Yeah. God.
Wah, wah.
I think as a kid, I watched it and went, oh, guys.
You're kind of watching it through laced fingers because you're more embarrassed for the actor. I'm going to avert my eyes so you can pretend that nobody ever saw this.
I'm just going to sit here and sip my soda loudly.
Nice.
Yeah, this
opened
movie...
at number 5, went on to gross $12.8 million domestically.
And is it...
Worldwide total of $15.8 million.
That's world? How much did it take to make?
25.
Yeah, this movie, the Highlander franchise has to just be a tax shelter for these people.
And they're working on a reboot for it.
They are working on a reboot, which makes me hopeful for one thing. One thing and one thing only, and that is there was about, I guess it's a decade ago now, there's one thing that Highlander probably could do amazingly, and just they've never done it well, and in modern time can't even get it off the ground, and that's a video game.
There's been some video games, but...
Yes.
I don't believe they've been very good.
No. I've played the one for the Commodore 64, which consists of you pacing towards a guy that looks exactly like you, hitting a button and watching your sword sort of bop, like just sort of like, and then one of your heads falls off. It's almost like the video game equivalent of Rock'em Sock'em Robots.
Wow.
But there was a rumor... Not even a rumor. There was, like, announcements that Square Enix, the same guys who do Final Fantasy, Dragon Warrior, all those, that they were going to do it. And there were some screenshots that were, like, test screenshots that were thrown around that looked really baller. They officially canceled it in 2010. Like, there was already, like, plot points made about it that you were going to play Owen.
Square Enix or Eidos?
Square Enix owns Eidos.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So it was probably Eidos then, but now it's Squeenix.
Gotcha.
But yeah, it took about 2 years for them to say, hey, look, here's a picture of it. Hey, we canceled it.
This reboot has been going on and off and on since 2008, so we're almost 10 years in, and the remake still has not yet happened.
Who do we have? Do we have a principal potential someone at the?
Justin Lin, who directed Fast 5, had signed on to direct the remake.
Mm-hmm.
It was supposed to be titled Highlander: The Reckoning, and then in 2010 they changed some stuff up, and now the movie was going to be made for fans of the Highlander franchise, but also for people who were new to it. So they were going to try to maybe re-envision the original movie. 2011, Twilight series writer Melissa Rosenberg was in negotiations to come on board the reboot. 2011, Lynn said that on MTV that the Highlander reboot was in pretty good shape, but I still have to see all the other things come together for us to go make it. 2 months later, he dropped out.
Jesus.
28 weeks later, director Juan Carlos Fresnadillo signed on to direct the remake. Ray Stevenson was rumored for the role of the Kurgan. Ray Stevenson from The Punisher Warzone, the second movie, the one after Thomas Jane.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha.
He was also, he was in Rome.
I do see here Ryan Reynolds at
well,
one
yeah,
point
after,
in time.
After Wolverine Origins, when he comes out as Wade with those katanas out of the elevator, everybody was like, oh, he can use a katana. He must be the new Highlander. That fell through. And now the rumor is that they have Bautista is cast as the Kurgan.
Yeah, Drax.
Yeah.
Ugh. I mean...
As of November 2014, the studio also wanted Tom Cruise to play the role of Ramirez.
Oh,
the
that
interest was... apparently appears to have been one-sided, however.
In my life, I've gone out of my way to... I figured there's no harm in trying. And I occasionally will send letters to companies saying, hey, look, you don't know me. No vested in, no, nothing could, nothing lost if you say yes. Let me write a treatment for your thing. I've done it twice. I did it once for Highlander, and I did it once for this video game series called Rumble Roses. I've never gotten a response back, but I just want, when Davis and Panzer listen to this, because they Googled themselves, I'm willing, and I'll get Robin on this too, we're both... We're smart motherfuckers. If you go to the Patreon, you go listen to our radio dramas. He and I will write the best Highlander treatment you've ever seen. And we'll do it gratis until it makes money. And then let's watch the ducats roll in. That's
some Vin Diesel shit. Like, look, we'll do it for free. Like, you make us your guy. And we will do it for free until it starts making money. But when it starts making money, you fucking make it rain.
Yes.
I am down with this plan.
What's great
we
is...
We may have to put the podcast on hold for a couple months. Like, can't talk, write in Highlander stuff.
Not for nothing. This immediately becomes the Highlander podcast.
Oh, absolutely.
This becomes your... Oh, this place is the only one. And there's its name.
Yeah. And fuck, in that case, I gotta do every episode in the Scottish accent.
Oh, God. Don't lose your edge. Oh. Can we talk the soundtrack? We have not mentioned...
Well, I mean, it was never officially the soundtrack.
Except, you know.
No, right, but you could never, like... It was the soundtrack because you knew that it was the soundtrack, not because it was called, you know, the soundtrack from the movie Highlander.
Correct. But every title track, or every track in the damn It's a Kind of Magic CD is mentioned by name, and Kurgan talks in half of them.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
It's a fantastic soundtrack.
Oh, it is. It's probably...
Absolutely. Probably one of my favorite CDs by them. And that's a hard thing to say because they made a ton of amazing CDs.
I would say that it probably has more songs that end up in my sort of rotation than any of the other CDs. Like, every CD probably has two or three songs in rotation. It's a Kind of Magic has, like, five.
But that's kind of a self-fulfilling thing because you know that that CD is the soundtrack from the movie.
That is true.
So you know more of those songs, so they end up in your rotation.
That's a fair point. And sadly, the holy grail of Queen music, that hymn singing New York, New York, has never been released. Apparently, there's not much more to it. I've heard two stories. I've heard that there is what you hear in the movie when he's singing New York, New York, Kurgan's driving the car with Brenda.
Right.
Like, that 5 seconds is pretty much all they recorded. There may be a second lead in and a second lead out, but that's it. I've also heard another one that Freddie hated the version he sang, so they never released it.
Well, that's probably fair, too.
Yeah. What else you got on the Highlander front?
I think, as much as I would like to see a reboot done, if it's done right, again, this is one of those... This movie was amazingly cultish and popular in my youth.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, this is almost borderline sacred cow to why do we need a remake of this? I don't care how good the remake is. I don't care what kind of actors they bring in. I don't care what kind of budget they spend on it. Anybody, if they are doing an honest-to-goodness, according-to-Hoyle remake of the first movie, anybody who plays the Kurgan is going to be held up against Clancy Brown, and I don't know that there's an actor out there that can top that. They would have to make it their own, and they would have to actively not try to do anything Clancy Brown did. And the sad thing is I think that would also come across as trying too hard. And at that point, it's not the Kurgan.
Yeah, there's two ways to look at it from a reboot front, and that's either you make a reboot, and then you have a Connor, and you have a Kurgan, and you have a Ramirez, which is going to, you're right, it's going to come across as a pale comparison to Sean Connery, Clancy Brown, and... Christopher Lambert, because he's who we know. Whether or not he's a great actor, he's the Highlander. Like, that's his one, other than I think like Greystoke Tarzan. I think there's like the only two.
He was Raiden
things.
Too in the first Mortal Kombat movie.
Yeah, but I think those other two are the two he's mostly known for. Behind Highlander, like 35,000, you know, times above. You know, he also played a chess player in Night Moves. You know.
Yeah, I think it depends on who you're talking to.
Fair. But there's the other way of doing it, which is don't do Connor and don't do Ramirez and don't do Kurgan. You have a great world concept in this game that these immortals have to play. We're in a world of like the Hunger Games and Battle Royale and the Divergent and all those sort of hey, look, puzzle movies with games involved and things. It fits a niche that exists, but the series hit on a lot of the building the mythology. So even doing a show series where you could do an open universe with this sort of world, I don't think they could do anything that's going to make somebody who's been a fan of all of it go, oh my god, that's really innovative. You'd be like, that's what Adrian Paul did, whatever. Oh, that's what Connor did, whatever. I think you're right. It's gonna be a hard nut to crack to do a reboot that doesn't make the fans go,
pfft. Wow, here's something that I completely agree with everything that you've said.
Which is really funny because the fans of this of Highlander are also the first ones to sit there and go, yeah, the second movie's garbage, the third movie's not much better, fine. Like, we kind of all admit that there was one really great movie and just grabbing at straws.
Right.
Go ahead.
Once again, showing that I am fuck all terrible when it comes to putting movies that people have been in chronological order... I did not realize that Greystoke came out 2 years before Highlander did.
I thought it was a little before. I thought it was early 80s.
Yeah, I did. I was not aware of that. I'm just looking at some of the other stuff that he's done, just trying to see if there's anything that that pops up.
That, I do, if you ever want to borrow it. I do have Night Moves on DVD.
Okay.
Too.
He was in Beowulf.
Which one?
wonder if this is the animated one. Yeah, the Neil, sort of animated one.
The Neil Gaiman one?
Nope. Comes from the same producer as Mortal Kombat.
Well, that apparently did very well.
Well, it's listing a budget, but not a... Not a not what it pulled in.
Oh, it might not have even like it might not have even gone to a theater.
Yeah, I don't know. Mortal Kombat. Here's one of my favorite titles that I'm seeing, and it's in French. It's Hercule et Sherlock.
And what does that mean?
If that means you know Hercules meets Sherlock, I'm
in. Oh yeah, no, we have to watch. We have to like live stream that shit.
Yeah, there's not a whole lot. Ghost Rider, Spirit of Vengeance.
God. He hasn't had a crazy career. And the more, and most people know that, like, he's at this point in time, he's, like, legally blind.
He was
on his way onto blindness during these movies.
Hercules and Sherlock. That's exactly what it means.
Oh, my God. Really?
It's a kid's movie. It's a, it looks like it's like a dog and dog.
Oh, that's not as cool as...
Yeah. When a counterfeiter is captured, two of his thugs have to work with two counterfeit money-sniffing dogs named Hercule and Sherlock in order to find the lost cash.
Because
that is the entirety of the Wikipedia page.
Because, dead serious, if it was Sherlock Holmes with, like, a Sinbad the Sailor 1960s-style Hercules...
That's what I was hoping for!
Like some sort of Barbarian Brothers movie?
Oh, I was so hoping for like a Lou Ferrigno Hercules with bad voiceover and fucking basketball cummerbund as Sherlock.
You came out of that. You came out with that so quickly and off the cuff. I rarely get struck by bendy flaps.
Then you've never seen the picture.
No, I have not. Or maybe if I have, I've seen so many, you know, bimber bum, cumby bats. Well, that's what we got on Highlander. I wish it well. I want there to, I've loved it so long that I would love to find something more that I love with it. But I just have a feeling any direction they take it in is basketball cummerbund, very good. Rob just sent me the picture, and it is literally a basketball in the Doctor Strange cape, and he's wearing a cummerbund.
Yeah.
It's so good. Do you have anything more on the Highlander front?
I would love to say yes, but...
No.
It is one of the... Like you said, it's one of those things where it's unfortunate where... I mean, just like The Crow, the first movie is kind of iconic in its own way, regardless of how good or bad or, you know, world-changing people may or may not think it is. And everything after that has just exponentially gone further and further to shit.
Yeah.
Yet when they try to reboot it, it's like, hey, you know what? There's still a lot of pushback on it. I would like to see a Crow reboot. At the same time, I would hate to see a Crow reboot.
Right.
Because... I think a Crow reboot, my big thing is that if you make a reboot of a very, very, very popular movie that had its thumb firmly on the pulse of society and a certain era of time, that you're diluting the impact that that movie had and still has, especially if the movie still stands up. Insert Ghostbusters argument here.
Sure.
I would love to see a Crow remake, but I don't know if it dilutes the movie, but it dilutes the tragedy of what happened, which is part of what made that movie that movie. I don't know that movie, and I think we talked about it in the Crow episode. I don't think the movie becomes as popular or makes nearly as much money if it wasn't the mystery around Brandon Lee's unfortunate demise while filming it. The same thing, not that anybody had an unfortunate demise in Highlander, but that movie kind of caught lightning in a bottle. It was a really cool idea that nobody had done before, and they did it decently for a certain demographic of people. Everything else after that was pretty terrible, but again, to redo that, it's going to be difficult. You really need to market it less for the people who saw the first movie and more for, like, there can't be any homages. There can't be any fan service. It's just got to be for people who were never indoctrinated into the first movie. But then you run the risk of doing a total recall. You know, because if you're completely alienating the first fan base, is anybody else going to care that they're rebooting the movie?
Yeah, it's the argument that we always have over these sort of reboots. Because if you're doing it, pardon me, the minute you start to wink to the original fans, we can't tell whether you're mocking us or trying to gain acceptance. Because if you're trying to gain acceptance, it just comes across like you're trying too hard. But if you don't do that, are you ignoring us? And it becomes... This is the reason I hate liking things. Because I understand the intention is to make money. I understand the intention is to make a good movie. But at what point in time... It's got to be perfection to recapture that. Otherwise, it just looks like a garbage cash grab.
Yep.
Can you think of any others that have that same sort of... Because Crow and Highlander, I almost want to say, are in a very specific niche of movies that are like that, that captured that perfectly. That even if they reboot them, it's going to be like... I have a feeling these all have to be very geeky movies. But there's only like they're the only ones I can think of that have so many sequels where they just kept trying to go to that well. Like, yeah, you could talk about horror movies.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Yeah, instead of just pulling the plug and rebooting it sooner, they just kept banging their head against the wall.
Yeah.
There's
got to be a couple others.
I mean, without going into the horror genre, and I don't even think that would really count.
Yeah, it'd be different.
Because they're usually so inexpensive to make in the first place. I'm having a hard time off the top of my head.
I'm sure there's got to be one or two out there that we're not thinking about, but whatever. Maybe you, our audience, know one where there's been a movie where they just kept running into the ground and they should have stopped at movie one, maybe two. Hard.
I mean... I'm sorry, I just did completely think of one. Not that they've ever... I don't think they've tried to reboot it. The Police Academy movies.
I do believe that is currently being shopped around.
For fuck's sake.
I'm not even kidding. I do believe the Police Academy movies have... I got one that is also getting... That is, I recently heard about. The Naked Gun movies are getting a reboot.
There are no more original thoughts in Hollywood.
I got one even worse for you on that one. It's the rumor mill speaks that it's not going to be a comedy. Try and figure that shit out.
Well, that might make it okay with me, to be honest.
But then why isn't it just...
It depends on how they don't make it a comedy.
Right.
Because... The Naked Gun movies were like slapstick parody comedy.
Mm-hmm.
If they made it a comedy in the essence of like Bad Boys 2.
Okay, or like 21 Jump Street.
Yeah, where it's kind of comedy, but it's like an action thriller comedy, then I could be okay with that. If it's not completely tongue-in-cheek and bad puns and everything else, I might be okay with that, but it can't be... a completely serious movie. Like, it can't be Silence of the Lambs, you know, we're going to remake The Naked Gun, but it's going to be completely serious. That yeah. I don't buy.
I just don't understand then why, I mean, if you're going to do a cop procedural, a comedy cop procedural, even if it's a, you know, not tongue-in-cheek, not punny, not silly, why does that have to be Naked Gun? It just doesn't make sense to why to even use that name. Ugh. Oh, but
because they're trying to tap people who remember the show and remember the movies.
I guess. On January 9th, 2012, New Line Cinema confirmed that Scott Zabelski, Tosh.0, will be the director of the upcoming Police Academy film. In 2012, Michael Winslow stated the production of the eighth film was due to begin in November and that an offer had been made to Shaq to replace Bubba Smith as Hightower. But this is all like 2012, so we're talking 5-6 years ago. God knows where it is.
Bobcat, who are they going to get to do all those the general commercials then? or shill icy hot patches. Fuck me.
No.
You know when reboots work? When they're and it sounds stupid to say, but when they're smartly done.
Sure, 100%.
By smartly doesn't necessarily mean intelligently. I mean more cleverly. Like the Dukes of Hazzard movie was brilliant in the way it was done, because part of it was homage, part of it was re-envisioning, part of it was self-depreciating humor. That worked really well. Dragnet, which we had talked about in the past, was a brilliant remake because of the way they went about doing it. It was a remake. It was a new version. It was kind of a re-envisioning. It had all that stuff going on. When you just take the characters and say, well, we're going to take the whole story and we're going to take the same characters and we're just going to update it, that rarely works
from
anything I've ever remembered.
You have to, I think we're stumbling on the right thing, and that's, you have to do sort of a transformative thing. Because the Brady Bunch movie did it in a sort and brilliant way. Those Brady Bunch movies are hysterical.
Yeah, but while the family stayed the same, it was the world around them that was different.
Yeah.
Which is very similar to the Dukes of Hazzard one.
Mm-hmm. And the Scooby-Doo movie also with the live action one. That one's really fun, the first one.
Right.
Because it does that nod to the audience. Yeah, we know. Let's talk about the camp directly and let's make it part of the plot, you know?
Sure.
So
but,
I think,
but it also had Matthew Lillard, so.
Also true. Who is now Shaggy?
Hey, Scoob.
I read it.
My
now that
favorite.
We...
I have to switch away. Big tangent. My favorite Matthew Lillard story ever. Did you ever see 13 Ghosts?
Oh, yes. Love that movie.
Okay. So when they're in the junkyard.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like pouring rain, and they're trying to do the scene where they're looking for the body. There was like a mafia victim body, I guess, that was in the trunk of one of the cars.
Okay.
So you've got Matthew Lillard, and you've got the guy who built the house, and they're kind of showing backstory. And it's pouring rain, and they had to do this scene like 4 or 5 takes. And the guy who's playing the actor who's playing the guy who built the whole diabolical house is like screaming over the rain and over the rest of the crew moving stuff around because he's frustrated with his other co-stars about, look, this is not just a movie about ghosts. This is a movie about the trials and tribulations and a gentleman trying to find recompense for his family. And he's going through this whole tirade while they're under this rain machine. And he gets done with his big tirade and there's like a 5-second pause and Matthew Lillard goes, yeah, and I yelled back, no, I'm pretty sure this movie's just about the ghosts. He's done some good stuff. He's done some actual dog shit movies too, but
yeah.
We'll have to save that for another episode.
Yeah, he did an interview where he said that right after Scooby-Doo, he said Scooby-Doo almost killed his career because he was too Shaggy.
Right.
So he's just getting typecast as Shaggy roles and he really, really hated it. But then after Casey Kasem handed him, sort of gave him the nod of approval that you can be the next Shaggy. He realized that, like, for as much as it's not like the biggest honor in the world, you know, there's only one person who was ever Shaggy, and he gets to be the second one.
Right.
So he sort of embraced it. Now he loves it.
Yeah, yeah.
But that's the end of our Matthew Lillard episode.
Yeah, exactly. Whew.
So what do you guys think? Do you think Highlander can be redone? Do you think they should do it? If so, what would you do with the franchise? You can let us know on the Facebooks, on the Twitter, the Facebook /something-something-cast, the Twitter, STST-cast. Email us at something-something-cast. And don't forget, every other week, the weeks you do not hear an episode here, there are people who are better than you because they get to hear us again on the patreon.com/something-something-cast.
You're terrible at this.
I got them all wrong, didn't I?
You really are.
Did I get them all wrong?
No, just, well, one and a half of them wrong.
Okay.
Twitter at STSTcast. Email somethingsomethingcast@gmail.com. Facebook.com/somethingsomethingcast. Patreon.com/somethingcast.
Shit. And I only
AudibleTrial.com/something.
And the only reason I made the Patreon one shorter was because I figured people wouldn't remember writing all of it. So just make it shorter.
Right. Arrgh.
Hate me sometimes. Or you could just go to...
You should probably go out and buy one of those interweb computer lap book thingies and, you know, make a file.
It's probably
with
true.
All the names on it.
Or you could just go to somethingcast.com.
Could do that. All the buttons are right there.
Yep. And then I don't really need to remember shit.
Want to give a special shout out this week. I don't know if I've done it recently. Sometimes I think I have, and then other times I don't think I have. I'm going to give a shout out to the Inside Joke Outside Voice Podcast Network.
Damn right.
We started this thing a couple years ago, like 2 years ago. We found out that we had some very awesome and very cool friends of ours who are also equally talented and funny, who were doing their own podcast shows. So we had gotten hooked up with Potter and Family, #PotterandFamily, shout out to Potter and Family.
What?
A great network of shows, and we started getting a bunch of followers, so we're trying to help our friends out with followers as well to get their shows heard. Some of them have also since joined the Potter and Family Network, but we have our own little group. You can go to ijov.net, Inside Joke Outside Voice Network, and you can find the other shows that are part of our little homegrown Friends and Family Network.
Yep.
Deadpan Fury, Nerdcast, Awesome the Podcast, Punch and Pie, and Two-Legged Tie.
You said it all right there. I got nothing else to add to that. That was perfect. They awesome. Each one of these shows is very different. They have a different voice. They have a different tone. And guaranteed, if you like us, you'll find at least one of those shows that you like for whatever reason you like us.
Yes.
But that is it for us. So without further ado, thank you all for listening. I'm James Hatton.
I'm Podcast Rob.
And we will see you guys next time.
Later.